call the third case today, 2013 AP 591, Oneida Seven Generations Corporation versus the City of Green Bay. Arguing on behalf of the City of Green Bay is Attorney Ted A. Warpinski. You will have 25 minutes. And he will then have 5 minutes in rebuttal. And arguing on behalf of the Oneida Seven Generations Corporation is Michael Apfeld. Mr. Arpinski? Oh, I'm sorry. Before I do that, I apologize to you. I was advised that the O'Keefe Middle School students were not going to be here, but now I'm advised that they are here. So would these students from O'Keefe Middle School please stand?
Ah, they're here indeed.
Yeah, big
according to my notes, you scheduled 33, but I will not do a head count. All of those of you we're here, are welcome, and you are courageous indeed, because the last time I looked out of the window, it was really snowing and there's a whiteout, so maybe you won't have school tomorrow, but don't take my word for it. All right, please be seated. The students are here with a national award-winning program sponsored by this court and by the State Bar of Wisconsin. It's called Court with Class, very clever title. And the students, both private school, public school, and homeschool students, are invited to come for an oral argument. They listen to the oral argument. They've been given materials about the oral argument. And after the second oral argument, which was about 12:15, these students, too, these students all met with Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. And the students and Justice Bradley discussed the procedures of the court.
Maybe.
She said she did it extremely well. And that's why she didn't think you were going to show up, because this would be not very significant after her presentation. But you showed up anyway. But the presentation and discussion was about the procedures of the court, not the substantive issues involved in any of the three cases we're hearing today. So before I complete calling you to argue this last case today, let me introduce the court to you all. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice, and to my right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, with whom the students met at lunchtime. And to my left is Justice Patrick Crooks, and to Justice Bradley's right is Justice David Prosser, and to Justice Crooks' left is Justice Patience Robinsack. And on the far right is Justice Annette Ziegler, and on the far left, Justice Michael Gableman. I try to make the introductions different, just to keep the court on its toes, to see if I do it right, and keep me on my toes, too. So, we are now ready to call the case. 13AP 591, Attorney Warpinski will be arguing for the City of Green Bay.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court. This case involves a certiorari challenge to the City of Green Bay's decision to revoke a conditional use permit issued to Oneida Seven Generations Corporation, OSGC, for a waste-to-energy facility after it determined that OSGC's CEO made untruthful statements before city governmental bodies while seeking the CUP. These statements were made in response to questions or concerns related to the public safety and health aspects of the project and the project's impact upon the city's environment. The Court of Appeals reversed the Circuit Court's decision upholding the revocation decision, holding that the city acted arbitrarily because it did not explain the rationale for why it did not adopt a recommendation by the city's plan commission that the permit not be revoked, and by not explaining its rationale for why it did subsequently revoke the CUP. The Court of Appeals went on to determine that substantial evidence did not support the city's decision to revoke. At its narrowest, the issue is whether the Court of Appeals got it right. Was further explanation needed regarding the basis for the decision to not adopt the Plan Commission or to revoke? And did the Court of Appeals' application of the substantial evidence test comport with this court's precedent, or did it weigh the evidence and substitute its judgment for that of the City Council? When you look at the process employed by the city to address the allegations of misrepresentation, it is clear it did not act arbitrarily. It was a reasoned process, afforded ample notice and opportunity for input from all sides. OSGC was well informed of the nature and source of the alleged statements, such that there was and has been opportunity for a meaningful review.
Counsel, you note that it was a reasoned process.
Yes.
And that process, as I understand it, included the City Council referring the matter, once the cup had been granted, referring the matter back to the Planning Commission for determination as to whether the Planning Commission believed that it had been misled. True?
Not exactly.
Okay.
What happened was at the time the allegations of misrepresentation were made to the council, which occurred in April of 2012.
After the cup had been granted.
Right. What happened was the Common Council said, let's investigate it. And it was referred to the Plan Commission, not necessarily to conduct any particular type of investigation. It was left to the Plan Commission to hold a hearing to investigate the allegations. And as typical,
I fail to see the distinction.
Well, what you're saying is they didn't provide specific direction as to what they wanted the Plan Commission to do. They referred it to the Plan Commission to undertake its own review. It did not direct them as to the manner it was going to be conducted. It did not
delegate. I didn't suggest that. I said, well, what other purpose was there to determine, other than to determine whether the Planning Commission believed it to have been misled by the testimony of the corporation's representative?
Well, certainly that was by nature what they were investigating.
So the answer to my question would have just been yes. So, right?
Well, now that the way you're phrasing it to me now, certainly the answer is yes. Yes,
okay. Your Honor. That wasn't so hard, was it?
No, it was not hard at all.
All right. And so, as I recall the record, the Planning Commission comes back and reports unanimously, no, we were not misled.
Correct.
Okay. So what specifically, what is it to pinpoint the reasons that were put on the record by the city to say, Planning Commission, we don't agree. You were misled on these several points. What is it specifically?
Well, there was a record made at the time of the time the decision was made by the City Council. It did two things when the City Council met after the Plan Commission issued its recommendation. First, it voted whether to adopt the Plan Commission's recommendation.
Yes.
That was simply a vote. The vote failed to adopt. Then there was a subsequent vote whether or not to revoke the permit. At the time that vote was taken, there was a statement made by those who were offering the motion to revoke. There was a four-part statement that was made on the record.
And
the statement was made...
Excuse me, counsel. Who are you referring to as having made the statement?
A member of the City Council. Right now I'm not redrawing.
My memory is it was Alder Sladek.
I was going to say Sladek as well, but I was trying to just double check that to make sure. But it was Alderman Sladek.
So that is what it is, the comments of Alder Sladek. I'm just trying to make sure I understand the record here. I'm not trying to make this a hostile okay, so it's the city's position that the city's difference of opinion with the Planning Commission in regard to whether the Planning Commission had been misled is contained within the comments of Alder Sladek in regard to this is not a proven technology, and I recall there were two others, but I don't have it in front of me.
Well, what I would say, yes, there was certainly the summation of the reasons for rejecting the Plan Commission would have been contained within the statement made by Alderman Sladek.
And I think there were three.
Well, he had a four-part statement that he made. Okay, and I can sort of repeat it, just give you a summary of it if you'd like.
Counselor, before you get down this road too far, I have to tell you I have a little concern with the path we're on, because you're being asked why the city determined, the plan commission was wrong in determining they were not misled. And my understanding of the CD that I listened to that you gave to us is that they were looking at whether the Common Council was misled, not with whether the Planning Commission was misled. So you have to straighten me out so I'm sure I'm on the right page.
The issue was the city misled? Was as a part of the CUP process, which is always a two-part process. First it goes to the Plan Commission. The Plan Commission makes a recommendation. That recommendation, then there's usually a second presentation to the City Council. The City Council then decides to adopt the recommendation. That's the normal process for the CUP. They basically repeated that same process with respect to the revocation process. It was referred to the Plan Commission. The Plan Commission held a public hearing, which is one of their core functions. They issued a recommendation, which is also one of their typical functions. In typical manner, the city took up that the recommendation and decided not to accept it, and then offered its own. A resolution was offered to revoke, and that resolution was then voted on.
Okay, but
without any, if I could finish my question, then I'll turn it back to you.
Okay.
Without, as I understand it, any intermediate independent fact finding in between the Planning Commission's review of the matter at the request of the city. As I understand it, Planning Commission sends over its recommendation, city rejects it, correct, and then immediately takes up the question of revocation. And in it, so I'll ask the question that Justice Rogensack asked, is the city's position that the city was misled contained within the statements of Alder Slattery?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
And what, before you go on, Justice Bradley, if I could just finish my thought, because I'm not sure we're talking about the same thing. Justice Gableman asks you if the city is determining in the Common Council meeting that the Plan Commission was misled. Okay, that's a different question from whether the Common Council was misled when they granted the CUP. I understand there's a two-step process that goes on. The city can always take the recommendation of the Plan Commission or not in the initial CUP process. I'm not familiar with the CUP revocation process where it ever goes back to the Plan Commission, but apparently that's what they did in this instance. But I want to know from you is, are we looking at whether the Common Council was misled or whether the Common Council determined the Plan Commission was misled? Because neither are two very different questions.
I would say that we're determining that the Common Council was misled.
Okay.
They're the ultimate decision maker on granting the CUP, so they were the ones who would have had to have been misled.
And that's what you answered absolutely to when I asked you if it was the city's position that it had been misled, that was contained within the statements of Alderman Slatt.
I would say that encompasses the same question. The city, what happened was, is they were...
You said absolutely just a few minutes ago.
Absolutely is... Yes, I did say it, I was correct then, and I believe it's true now.
So if I understand it right, they apply for a CUP, the Plan Commission takes and hears testimony and evidence, it then makes a recommendation to the council. The council ends up having a separate hearing that basically is identical to the hearing that was before the Plan Commission. The Common Council independently makes its own determination of whether it should issue, right?
Correct.
It ends up issuing, and then later, whether there's whatever happened that made them want to revisit the issue, they then sent it back to the Plan Commission to have another hearing. The Plan Commission said, we don't think that there have been misrepresentations to us. And then the Common Council again has a separate hearing before it and says, well, we think there were misrepresentations to us. And then they revoked the CUP. Is that how it went down?
That's correct.
Okay.
Council, let's try to be specific, right? And when
the city council was concerned about misrepresentations. What were they talking about? Misrepresentations made to them in the October 2012 hearing?
No.
What were they talking about? Where were those misrepresentations purportedly made?
They were contained primarily in the presentation made to the Plan Commission.
That's right. And what this, just for clarification on for everyone on the bench here, and what was the date then primarily those misrepresentations were made?
February 21 of 2011.
Okay. So we weren't talking about misrepresentations made at subsequent hearings. The focus is really on what representations were made in February of 2011 before the Plan Commission. That's where the representations were purportedly made. Is that correct?
That's where the most of the record sites certainly refer
to. That's right, and that's what they were concerned about, that the representations were made at the Plan Commission in February of 2011. So when, as the Court of Appeals indicates in its opinion, when finally it came to the Common Council again, they considered the Plan Commission's recommendation, and I'm reading from paragraph 9, and also, they ended up voting, I'm looking at paragraph 12 now, they voted to direct the Plan Commission to hold a hearing to determine whether the CUP had been obtained by misrepresentation, now I'm adding words to the Court of Appeals opinion, when it was before the Plan Commission before. Is that correct?
Well, I don't think that the source or the exact nature of the misstatements had been determined yet at that point in time. So I would say at the time the allegations were raised to the council, they were brought up. Citizens came forward and said, we think there were misrepresentations. So what I'm saying is that until the hearing was conducted, until the October 2012 hearing was conducted.
October 3rd, 2012
yes,
hearing?
Yes, until the first hearing was conducted. All of the information, the evidence, the record about what had been said was then assembled and presented. Okay, so.
Exactly. And so, and what was assembled, and all of the information that was assembled and presented was this. What did they say at the first Plan Commission and the second one in October when they took all of the testimony, had a court reporter there with the transcript? After you listen to all of what's being presented, did they make misrepresentations to you, Plan Commission? Isn't that what they were asked?
Well, that's what the Plan Commission asked itself and answered.
Well, didn't the Common Council vote to direct the Plan Commission to hold a hearing to determine whether CUP had been obtained by misrepresentation? Notice of the hearing was published in September of 2012. The issue, as defined, was whether the information submitted and presented to the Plan Commission was adequate for it to make an informed decision and whether or not to advance the CUP that was recommended. So the focus is on the stuff that was presented, on the information that was presented to the Plan Commission, both at the initial hearing in September of 2011, I think it was, and then this full kind of due process hearing or whatever you want to call it in October 3rd of 2012. That's our focus of misrepresentation. Is that correct?
Sure. What is that.
And what is the record that we have before us as to the February 2011 meeting?
The record? Yeah. Well, there are minutes of the meeting. There's also an audio transcript.
It is minutes of the meeting. All right. That's not a full transcript.
Right. It's not a full transcript.
All right. What else is there?
There was an audio recording of that as well.
We were viewing the, that's why I asked you chronologically what was going on here, and you told me that there was a hearing before council, too. There was a Plan Commission, there's the application, Plan Commission has its own hearing, hears testimony, they make a recommendation to the Common Council. Common Council, then you said, had its own separate hearing. My question of you is, I thought you were saying Common Council, they misrepresented things to Common Council. Now I hear you answering Justice Bradley's question that, no, we're not reviewing that. We're reviewing Common Council kind of second-guessing the Plan Commission's determination that they didn't represent to them, misrepresent to them. Those are two different things to me, and I personally need to know what we're evaluating and who we're evaluating. Let me just get to the bottom line. For me, anyway, when you apply for this kind of a conditional use permit, and you, if you make misrepresentations and you get the permit based upon those, I don't think you deserve to have the permit. If, however, you do what you're supposed to do and you don't misrepresent and you get the permit, and then later Common Council wishes they wouldn't have given you the permit, I don't think they get to just pull the permit either because they had a change of heart. So I'm trying to figure out what it is we're reviewing, because if we're reviewing the February 21 representations and not the March 1 Common Council hearing, then you have the Plan Commission saying we weren't, they didn't misrepresent us.
What we are reviewing here today is the city's decision to revoke. That decision was made after the Plan Commission hearing. It was made on October 16th of 2011. So that's the decision that's been, that was subject to certiorari review.
Could I ask you a question about the Common Council? As I understand it, the Common Council approved conditional use permit in March 2011.
Right.
You know what the vote was?
I believe it was 9-2, if I'm not mistaken. 9-1, maybe. I think it was one nay vote for that, I believe.
9-1. And then in October of 2012, it was 7-5 not to approve.
Correct.
Did a number of members change their vote?
There was a change in the council. There was an election in between, so there is that. That happened. The original in 2012, actually shortly after the decision was made to hold the hearing, there was also a new members joined the council. So at the time the hearing took place in October, there actually were, it was not the exact same 12 member council at that time. So some members did change their vote. Yes, I believe at least one or two of the members who were voted in favor changed their votes to vote, I assume changed their votes, voted at that time to say that they had been misled.
Well, one member changed.
At least one. I know there were, I'm trying to remember how many were. I think there was five members who were the same on the council at the time the second vote was taken. There were two of those members voted in the majority to revoke. So if one of those, I think it was Alderman Nicholson, maybe was in the voted against the permit at the first instance, and I think he voted that they had been misled as well. So
but would it be fair to say that four members of the council did not change their position and they voted to sustain their previous vote?
Yes.
Now, would it be fair to say, well, let me ask you this, Councilman Slatic, who made the case for the council in October of 2012, is he a member of the council in 2011?
I don't think he was on the council in 2011. Let me just double-check my name.
Would it be fair to say then that most of the people who voted that the council had been conned into voting were not members of the council?
I wasn't sure I caught what you said about what kind of voting?
Conned into voting for this project were not members of the council.
Well, I don't think that I don't think what they're saying is that they were conned. I think they're saying that there were misrepresentations made to government, to representatives of the city, including the Plan Commission, including the Common Council. So what they're saying is that as a part of the process, that the part of the CUP process, these misleading statements were made. So it really goes to the integrity of the process. Were true or false statements made during the application process? That was the question that ultimately was answered by the City Council. And I think it goes more to the integrity of the process. And along the way, they went back and looked at it and said, we're looking at this now in 2012, and we're looking back at their record, and we're saying, you know, there were misstatements made to the Plan Commission.
Mr. Warpinski, can you tell us what these alleged misrepresentations were?
Certainly, I can point to a specific record spot, but I can. They really were that they made a statement was made there would be no hazardous materials. A statement was made that there would be no stacks.
Where were these statements made?
These the ones I'm reading to you were primarily made in front of the Plan Commission, okay, and included in written materials submitted with the application.
And if you would be specific, where are you getting these from? Is there a transcript? Is it the minutes? What are you getting it from?
Minutes and transcripts. Usually the minutes would be augmented by a review of the audio, and then we would have cited to the audio portion of the record at the point in time with, that coincided basically with where those statements would have been reflected in the minutes. So I believe that for every time we made a reference in the minutes, there would be a corresponding audio portion that would also have been cited.
We only have one transcript in the record, however, and that's the October 3rd, 2012 hearing by the Plan Commission as to whether or not they believe they were misled. Is that the only
I'd still like you to give me what the alleged misrepresentations were, and then I'm happy to yield to
No, I yield immediately.
Okay. The statements that I'm referring to are there would be no hazardous materials. There would be no stacks. There was ash that could go right into organic farming. There will not be any chemicals. It's all taken out in the process. It's all scrubbed out. All of these answers were given in response to questions regarding the environmental aspects of the project. And so those are the statements that were identified by those that raised the issues with the city. These are the same issues that were raised by those citizens who then raised these concerns. And those concerns became an issue after the CUP was issued because that's when the project went through the DNR review process. And many of these things became much more fleshed out. It became very clear that that OSGC didn't really know what the emissions were going to be. It became very clear that they didn't really, this technology wasn't as certain as it was being projected. That's what happened. And so it was those things that happened after that led people to say, what did they tell them to begin with? How does what's happening now mesh with what was originally presented to us? And it was, so you have to compare what was said to the council, to the Plan Commission, because it's all part of the record. That becomes part of what the Common Council gets to review. And then you take that and you couple that with what happened during the environmental assessment process by the DNR, where more information became apparent, including that they didn't really know what the emissions were going to be, including the fact that they ended up having stacks that were part of the original permit. And it's hard to look back and say, how could you not know as a part of your application process when you're saying no emissions, when you're saying all of these things, how can you not know and then turn around 6 months later and you have a DNR permit that's got, you know, 360-foot stacks and 340-foot stacks? It didn't add up. And so people brought that to the city's attention and said, let's take a look at this. So you look at that, what it appears is that they projected certainty as to the knowledge about how this was going to operate when, in fact, they had no certainty. And that's really what happened here, is they should have said, we don't know the answers to these questions. We're going to work with everybody on this, but we don't know what the emissions are going to be. We don't know how many stacks we're going to need. We don't know any of this information right now because we haven't gone through that process yet. But instead, they projected certainty. And what it does is it goes back, like I said, to the integrity of the process to begin with.
Let me just go back, and you gave us the examples of misrepresentation. My understanding is that the commission's proceedings of February 2011 is an audio recording and it can be listened to and heard.
Yes.
That's before the commission. My understanding is that the Common Council meeting in March 2011, when it approved the COD, that's not decipherable.
Is there, I think there's an audio recording of that, too. We'll just double check on that. I thought there was an audio recording.
A recording, though. Attempts have been made to listen to it, but it cannot be deciphered. It cannot be heard into an intelligible whole. So that was before the Common Council in 2011.
Correct.
And it's your position, as I understand it, that that's where certain representations were made, and that's why thereafter the council in October 2012 decided that they were not proper. Now, the plan commission hearing in October 2012 is recorded, right?
The plan commission hearing of October 2012 was recorded, yes.
And what about the city council?
I believe there is an audio recording of that meeting as well. I'm not sure if that was videoed, but usually they are. The Common Council is a videoed, so I believe there's a video of that.
So we have the plan, if that's right, we have the plan commission and the city council in 2012 when they revoke.
Correct.
The city council. And we have the plan commission, but not the city council, in March 2011 when they grant.
Right. You're saying, well, you're saying that the plan, that the city council is not you can't make out what they're saying, so I would concede that to you.
So I think that's why the justices ask these questions on what are you relying? Are you relying on misrepresentations to the city council, or are you relying on misrepresentations to the plan commission, right? And ultimately, it was representations of the city council, if I understood all your answers.
Well, ultimately, that's who matters. They're the ones who make the
decision.
That's
right. I don't disagree with you. But I'm saying what you're missing, if I'm correct, and what I tell you, is you've got the city council in 2012, but you don't have the city council except the minutes, which are quite limited compared to a transcript. And so you don't know what happened in 2011 before the city council.
We do know that there were minutes taken, that those minutes were reviewed and approved. So, I mean, we do have that is presented to be an accurate summary, at least, of the
hearing. This is a certiorari review. We review the record before us, not something else, right?
Correct.
Okay. So we've got an issue as to what the record is and what it says. Okay? That's all I'm trying to point out.
Saying that we just happen to have a bad copy of whatever it was from March 2011, or are you saying that everyone's copy is bad?
I'm going to have to just check that. I'll respond to that as soon as I get an answer to it. But I believe that we heard there's an audio of that. I haven't been able to find my note to see if I have a reference to it right here while we're talking. But let me just hear.
Maybe Mr. Apfer will have some light on that, too.
I suspect he will. My red light is on, so I can.
You can sit down, but you'll be standing back up soon. Okay. Thank you. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Michael B. Apfeld, representing the Oneida Seven Generations Corporation.
Yes, Your Honor. Chief Justice Abramson, Your Honors, may it please the Court. The outcome of this case will determine in large part the future trajectory of private real estate development in Wisconsin. The ability to plan is indispensable to real estate development. If a municipality may revoke a permit a year and a half after it was issued for a proposed project that is in full compliance with the permit's condition and on which the developer has already spent millions, no investment is safe. And if no investment is safe, rest assured no investor will step forward. Now, if I may depart from my prepared remarks and try to address what is and is not in the record, I may be able to clarify certain things. If we start at the beginning, Justice Ziegler, you asked whether the first proceeding was the February 21st, 2011 hearing before the Plan Commission. I would qualify that because the city here wants to focus exclusively on what was said orally at this meeting. But what you have to take into account is that there were hundreds of pages of materials, or at least a couple hundred pages of materials, submitted before that meeting to the planning staff, which analyzed it and reported to the Plan Commission. And it is quite clear from the remarks of the Plan Commission that they were familiar with that. Now, that gets us to the hearing of the Plan Commission. There are two sources for what went on there. One is the minutes that are, you know, paper minutes that are in the record. There is also an audio recording. It is, to say the least, an imperfect audio recording, but it does contain some statements and some repartee that is not reflected in the minutes. But that's what we have for that. We then move to the March, whatever it was, 2011 Common Council hearing. I believe that hearing, there is a video recording of that hearing. I believe it because it's in my materials and I viewed it. So you can watch that. There may be technical obstacles, but it can be done. We then of course there is a wealth of written material consisting of, you know, the proceedings before the DNR and the Department of Energy, principally. There are some minutes of an April 2012 City Council meeting, and that's the one that referred the matter back to the Plan Commission. Then you get to the, I believe it was October 3rd, 2012 Plan Commission, and there you have a written transcript. But in addition to the written transcript, you do have several hundred pages of submissions that were sent to the Plan Commission before the hearing. But anyway, that hearing is a written transcript. And then you get to the, what was it, October 16th, 2012, meeting of the City Council. And that is recorded on video again. And I would make one other comment, you know, before ending my summary of what's out there in the record, and that is, if you watch the video of the October 16th, 2012 City Council proceeding, you will see that it does not bear the most remote resemblance to an evidentiary hearing. Nothing remotely resembling testimony that would be admissible in court is presented there.
Was so, that required, Counsel?
I think that you have to examine it, but there is really nothing presented in that hearing that in any way adds to the record of what was before either the Plan Commission or the City Council in 2011.
Well,
as the Court of Appeals, I'm sorry.
Can I ask you? This is a certiorari review.
It is.
Are we reviewing all of the things you just told us about? What is the record that we're supposed to be reviewing?
I think the record is everything, because everything is relevant. But you have to, if I could try to answer the question.
Sure.
It is clear that you are reviewing you're reading the Court of Appeals decision, but it was reviewing the decision of the City Council to revoke the permit. But the decision of the City Council in revoking a permit, the rights of the city in revoking a permit are not the same as in granting the permit in the first instance. They do not have unfettered discretion. And in fact, they need grounds. And in fact, they articulated their grounds, these alleged misrepresentations. So in order to determine whether that they had a reasonable basis or any basis for making that determination, you have to look at the rest of the record on which they based that determination. And since they themselves have framed the question in terms of whether really the Plan Commission was misled, that requires you to look at the record. Two things. Not only at the record that was before the Plan Commission at the time it made its decision, which consists not only of the oral presentation, but of all the written materials that preceded it. But you then must take into account all the written and oral materials that were before the Plan Commission at the time it undertook the investigation it was told to undertake.
But, Counselor, didn't the written materials that started out with the Plan Commission, like I've got a bunch of pictures and a bunch of stuff on renewable energy facilities that are occurring not in Wisconsin, but things that were brought up, weren't those all sent through to the Common Council so that they had those to look at and rely on when they issued the CUP to start with?
I believe they were. I believe that everything that the Plan Commission had in 2011 was sent forward to the Common Council, and in addition, there was one other thing that the Common Council had before it. One of the alderperson Wisniewski, who was both a member of the council and a member of the Plan Commission, was not completely satisfied with his understanding of the technical materials that had been submitted. And so he actually he requested, I don't know if this was compensated, but he requested a private citizen, an engineer, to undertake his own evaluation of the proposal. And that engineer, a man by the name of William Acker, undertook it and made a special presentation to the Common Council, and you will hear that special presentation in the video recording of the Common Council. And you will hear Mr. Acker quite clearly express the conclusion that first, of course, there are going to be emissions from this, but these emissions compare very favorably to the emissions that are generated by a production of an equivalent number of kilowatts using other fossil fuels, as in coal. Did that answer your question? Or perhaps more?
I was more focusing on all the written materials that are in the appendices. And
yes.
When we're looking at what information was before the Common Council, I think one of the things that it was Alderperson Sladek or who that spoke at the last hearing, they said, well, we asked a lot of questions because what was given to us about facilities like this were facilities elsewhere, but they really weren't about the facility that was going to be built for us. So we wanted to know, how did this facility that was going to be built compare with the written documentation? So that's really why I was asking.
Okay. And I think to some extent that is what Mr. Acker actually attempted to do. But at this point, I think it's worth noting that Seven Generations never represented to the Plan Commission or the City Council or anyone else that this was some sort of knockoff facility. It was quite clear that, this was an amalgamation of technologies that had been, to some extent, used elsewhere, and there were voluminous submissions made. And the notion, only later developed, that Seven Generations should have been able to say specifically how much this particular plant was going to produce is really quite artificial. Because if you read not only the comments of the Plan Commission, but the comments of the City Councils back in 2011, it's quite clear that they are deferring the precise emission standards and the policing of those emission standards to DNR and DOE and EPA. And you know what? That's what they always do. That's actually in their general ordinances. The ordinance that deal with air emissions and water emissions, et cetera, refer elsewhere. They simply, the city does not undertake that analysis, and it's unrealistic to expect it to do so.
What should the test be for a city to be able to revoke a conditional use permit? This case is bigger than the issue between these parties.
Clearly bigger. The first thing that I think that this court ought to do is to explicitly recognize, I think it's clear, but I think they should still explicitly recognize, that the issuance of a conditional use permit does give rise to vested rights in an applicant who complies with those conditions, as this applicant did here, including obtaining an actual building permit. Then, a municipality may not revoke a conditional use permit without establishing some recognized ground for the avoidance of obligations. Now, I can't speak to other potential grounds. The ground at issue here, the recited ground, is misrepresentation. And so where the asserted ground for revocation is misrepresentation, I would contend that the city must establish, first, a statement of fact and a promise or a prediction that this will perform in a certain manner is not truly a statement of fact, but let's go on. A statement of fact that is both untrue, and material, and I will return to materiality in a moment, and that the city believed, and on which the city relied. I would also submit that the misrepresentation must be intentional and not merely a negligent misrepresentation. Now, first, if I may, discuss materiality. As I think we mentioned in our brief, the authority for the proposition that a permit may be revoked on the basis of fraud is, frankly, a little thin. And there are also some conflicting indications, but let's assume that the city ought to be entitled to some kind of relief. If you look at those cases which do allow the revocation of a permit, or at least an analog to the revocation of a permit, you see that the misrepresentations, there are certain common elements to the misrepresentation. First is, as far as I can see, every one of them is clearly blatant fraud. You know, intent to deceive. The second thing is that most of them consist of a misrepresentation relating to the very legality of the proposed use. In one situation, there was a misrepresentation that led the municipality to ignore certain other conditions that it would, these were environmental conditions that it would have imposed had it known the true nature of the proposed development. So it seems to me that to be material, it must be a representation that either disguises the unlawfulness of the project or the need for additional conditions. Now, I fear that that is a somewhat long-winded answer, but I don't think that this boils down to a simple soundbite.
I guess not.
Now,
well, I'll tell you what I heard is the soundbite. The soundbite is, once you get that CUD, you call it a vested right, and then there are limitations on revocation. And the only one that's involved in this case is misrepresentation, and you are taking the tack intentional. I mean, that's the hardest one for you to prove.
Well, I don't have to prove it.
I know, you don't have to prove it.
I don't have to prove
it. It's the hardest one for them to prove against you.
It clearly is, because this is a matter of fact and not a matter of discretion or opinion.
I know, but now we're reviewing this. We're reviewing this. This court's reviewing it. When we review whether there has been a misrepresentation, what is the standard for review? Because the misrepresentation is the application of a legal doctrine to facts.
Well, certainly the underlying burden of proving misrepresentation is the middle burden.
Yes, that's the general point.
That's the general rule. Now, the interesting twist here is that the general rule regarding the review of municipal actions is highly deferential. But in this case, we have a municipality that not only reversed itself, but made its decision on the basis of a factual proposition that candidly is not only unsupported by anything in the record, but I think directly contrary to the very commission to which it sent that factual question for investigation.
Counselor, but if you look at, and I'm sure you've many times looked at, the video from the last hearing before the Common Council.
Yes.
They make specific factual determinations that they were misrepresented to. And what was asserted is that a certain person who was representing Oneida probably didn't know the answers to all the questions that they asked that came up during their discussion. And instead of saying he didn't know, he did try to give them an answer.
So let me finish. So if they made a factual determination that there were misrepresentations, even though we could decide differently and say, well, I don't think that's really a misrepresentation because they knew they had to go before the DNR later on, right? Given the deferential standard of, is there substantial evidence that the Common Council, on the evidence presented, could have made the decision they do, I'm not sure that you don't have a difficult problem by our focusing on the factual nature of a misrepresentation. Whether it's a misrepresentation or not, in this case, they're saying factually they were misrepresented to. Whether the misrepresentations are sufficient to have misled the council, I think, is a different standard.
The question is not whether certain statements of OSG representatives taken out of context could have been misleading. And by the way, that OSG representative said on several occasions, I'm not an engineer. We have some engineers if you want to ask them the question. I'm not the engineer. Mm-hmm. He said that.
Yeah.
But the question is not whether or not his words taken out of context are capable of misleading someone. The question is whether his words taken in the context of all the other words and all the other written submissions did in fact mislead the Planning Commission or did in fact mislead the City Council in 2011. And there is no evidence.
I agree. It's mm-hmm. factual. I agree it's factual. Mm-hmm. I think our deference to facts that are found by an administrative body is even stronger than our deference to a final decision that they make.
There were no... First, we every justice here knows that the Plan Commission, which is the only body before whom any really allegedly material misrepresentations were made, looked over everything and said, we were not misled. We knew there was going to be emissions. We knew there was going to be stacks. We knew there were going to be toxins, etc.
I don't disagree with what you're saying.
All right.
That, the Common Council came to a different conclusion.
Okay. There is no fact that would allow them, not a single fact in this record that would allow them to rationally come to a different conclusion. There is none.
Council, reference is made to the finding of facts then of the Common Council on October 16th, 2012. Now, we have, of course, Alderman Sladek, who made a motion, and his motion was 4 points. And the first point, and I'm going to paraphrase, the first point, number one, I guess I won't paraphrase, I'll say it verbatim. Number one, the chief executive officer of Seven Generations Corporation, Kevin Cornelius, made untruthful statements before the city governmental bodies while seeking the conditional use permit for the gasification project. These false statements were made in response to questions or concerns related to the public safety and health aspects of the project and the project's impact on the city's environment. I read the number one verbatim. Number two, I'm going to paraphrase, it says the statements were plain. Number three, that Kevin Cornelius knew his statements were false. And it goes on more. For brevity, I won't read it all. And the gravamen of number four is, and when asked about the subject of emissions and chemicals and hazardous materials at this project, Kevin Cornelius provided false information. Are there any other, anything else that could be construed? Let me rephrase that. I'm not sure these are findings of facts, but let's say if they are findings of facts, is there anything else in the record of October 16, 2012, that could be referred to as a finding of fact?
Well, first, I do not believe there is anything else that can be referred to as a finding of fact, but perhaps equally important is I don't believe that there's anything in the record upon which those findings can rationally be based.
Yes, I understand that. So this is Alderman Sladek. He made the motion, so there aren't any other. I have the transcript.
Who wasn't around at the time.
That's right. I have the transcript, but I don't have it committed to memory. I didn't see anything else that would be the findings of fact. Now, the Court of Appeals really took the city to task. I mean,
yes, it did.
Sometimes when I read language, I smile and say, whoa, strong words to follow. It called the city's actions in paragraph 22 fickle and inconstant. But it went on, and more importantly, for my point, that it said that there were no specific findings, that not until it got to the appellate brief in the Court of Appeals was there any specific allegation of what was said. I mean, and how do you respond to that?
Well, what I think the Court of Appeals is saying, the Court of Appeals, of course, went on to say there simply weren't any misrepresentations.
That's right.
But what the Court of Appeals is, the Court of Appeals clearly understands that they are saying there were misrepresentations. But what the Court of Appeals is saying is, tell us what they were. You can't just say they're misrepresentations. You have to say, he said X, Y, and Z, and it's not true because. But I would also add that even if they said he said X, Y, and Z, and it wasn't true, that is not the full inquiry. The real inquiry is whether or not, even if something he said was somehow inaccurate, that the Plan Commission and the Common Council really misunderstood what this project was all about. And they did not misunderstand what this project was about.
Counsel, twice when I asked Mr. Warpinski, he, in response to my questions, told me what comported with my understanding before I came into this hearing, and now I want to ask you if it comports with yours. And I think, based on your response to Justice Bradley, that it will, but I stand to be corrected, that the City Council's determination that it, meaning the City Council, had been misled by the Seven Generations Corporation was articulated by Councilman Sladek at that last hearing in October 16, 2012, and that, as far as I can tell, the allegations were false information having been provided by the CEO in regard to emissions, chemicals, and hazardous materials. Does that comport with your understanding of the allegation?
Yes, generally, yes.
Generally.
Well, first, I think that the city is claiming that the city itself was misled. I could go back and summarize what went on at the...
But this is, as far as I understand it, is there any other document, is there any other comment by any city council member that alleges any other allegation of having been misled?
I do not believe so.
Thank you.
We have here the Court of Appeals finding on prong 3 and 4, if you will, of the writ of certiorari. They said that the decision was arbitrary because there was not specific reasoning given for the decision. And then the fourth element of cert review is there's no facts of record that would support the decision. Do you agree with both of those premises of the Court of Appeals or just the final one, that there's no facts of record?
No, I agree with both of them. I think that this was arbitrary and capricious. I think it is an example of the worst sort of decisions, the unprincipled decisions, the sort of decisions that this Court was generally concerned about in the Town of Ryan versus Bizzell case. Decisions which, are really untrammeled by any particular standards and which, as this Court observed, invite favoritism and discrimination. But I also most wholeheartedly concur that there simply is no evidence in the record, certainly not substantial evidence, that either the Plan Commission or the City Council was misled back in 2011. And I can go through, to the extent we've been able to identify things that are alleged, to have been misleading, I can go through them and show that, in fact, no reasonable person really should have been misled, but it's all immaterial in light of the fact that they weren't misled.
Is that the standard, whether a reasonable person must be would be misled? The reasonable person standard is
well, actually,
standard?
The standard here is whether or not the city was in fact misled. And where the people who are alleged to have been misled disclaim having been misled, I think the inquiry ends there. But if you had someone standing up and saying, oh, I didn't perceive the nature of this project, then I think the next question is, could a reasonable person have been misled in considering this information in its entirety?
The circuit court certainly disagreed with your analysis. The circuit court said that the PowerPoint that was presented showed there would be no smokestacks. Mr. Cornelius said there would be no smokestacks. And in the CUP, you and I both know there are drawings that do not indicate any type of smokestack. So, you know, the circuit court is apparently finding something that's in the record that shows that there was a statement made that there wouldn't be any smokestacks. And the circuit court goes on with that. My biggest problem, Counselor, with this case is the standard of review. I mean, it's a certiorari review, and I go back and I look in the statutes, you know, and I look at 2257 on what the review is to be, and I have a lot of trouble with being quite as broad
well,
as you would like me to be.
You must. It may be a deferential standard, although I think it should not be where the city has in fact reversed itself and has ignored the findings of the very commission to which it referred.
Have any obligation to do whit with those findings, Councillor?
Well,
no obligation. Do not.
Let me.
Because the Plan Commission has no authority to rescind a CUP. They were just taking it up because the Common Council asked them to take it up, but that's not part of the usual process.
Well, they were asked to investigate, and in point of fact, the ordinances of the City of Green Bay authorize the Plan Commission to make not only recommendations but to make findings. And I am referring.
No, I don't disagree with what you're representing. You don't
yes.
have to read it to me. I read the same thing, and I don't have a problem with your representation of it. My problem is I believe I have to look at the Common Council's determination and what it thought. And then I hear what you're saying, and the Court of Appeals' opinion is quite strong, but then I go back and read the Circuit Court, who affirmed the City of Green Bay's decision and said why.
Your Honor, the Circuit Court was just wrong. It was wrong because, among other things, it was focusing on the wrong question. Are these things capable of being misleading? That is not the question. The question is, was someone actually misled? And no one was misled.
Well, they say they were. Whether they were or not, that's what the Common Council.
There is no evidence that they were. Not a shred of evidence that they were misled. And, well my red light is on.
Isn't that the issue? Why isn't that the central issue? And this is why I keep hammering home on what the city's articulated reason for believing it was misled was. Why isn't the central issue of this case, and I don't understand why both the attorneys are not focusing in on this, is because the city is the ultimate, the city council is the ultimate decision maker, not the planning commission. The city council is the ultimate decision maker. The city council said that their reasons for being misled or the basis for their belief that they were misled were the three things articulated by Mr. Sladek. So therefore, it seems to me, I stand to be corrected, that the issue is there substantial evidence in the record to indicate that they were misled on those three issues?
I agree.
May I finish, or may I at least just, yes.
It was a question, not a speech.
I agree, but I would add only that the city is charged with the knowledge of the Plan Commission. The Plan Commission is the designated recipient.
I understand. You want us to look at all the documents.
Yes.
You mentioned hundreds of documents. I understand how the DNR, the EPA, and the I haven't had much contact with the DOE, but I'm going to imagine if it's like any other bureaucracy, there's a lot of paperwork involved there, too. So you want us to consider all of that. Mr. Warpinski has indicated he wants us to consider this in the context in which it arises, so I don't see any difference between the attorney's position on that.
Well, actually, I believe, and Mr. Warpinski will clarify this, I'm certain, but I believe that it is the city's position that you don't look at everything in context, because their brief actually concedes that if you did, there is some explanation for the allegedly misleading statements.
Well, then that's a question for a minute or two from now.
Could I?
Thank you.
Justice Prosser.
I found Mr. Acker's statements in October of 2012.
Yes.
His presentation to the council in March of 2011, is that in?
That will appear in the video recording of the March, whatever it is, 2011 proceeding. I know he prepared a written report. I cannot tell you here whether the report is in the record or where to find it. But he then, in 2012, in both a written summary as well as in testimony before the Plan Commission, as well as in testimony before the Common Council, City Council, goes back and reiterates the fact that in 2011 he undertook this explanation, he got up and he explained to the City Council what this, you know, what the essential nature of this project was.
I have a question for you two. One of the issues that I see in the case is assume that the record that the city has made is not good enough to support the city. Let's just assume that. Is the remedy to send it back to the city and say, tell us exactly what the misrepresentations are, exactly when they were made, and then yet you relied on them and were taken in by it?
No.
I expected that. Why not?
The remedy is to affirm the Court of Appeals. And but the reasons, I think, are perhaps twofold. The first reason is that the record ain't going to get any better than it is. I mean, you can see what was before the Plan Commission and the City Council. And the second reason is the city has now had ample opportunity, both in the Circuit Court and in the Court of Appeals and in this court, to articulate exactly what about that record they think constitutes a misrepresentation. And as I've obviously urged you to conclude, it's not enough.
Okay, my second question is, I read the case, the Robertson case, 39 was second at 658, that's a pretty old case, said that under the relevant administrative procedure statute that covers this, and I don't think it's changed that much, if any, the decision of the agency may be reversed if unsupported by substantial evidence in view of the entire record as submitted. And that's why you keep saying, look at everything. Is that right?
Well, that's not the only reason I'm saying look at everything, but I certainly, we have cited cases that say that you must, that cert review involves a review of the entire record. But in addition to that, and as I think I was kind of alluding to a little bit earlier, in order to make this determination, you simply have to look at the record. You have to look certainly at everything that was before the body who was allegedly misled in the first place. And then you have to look at everything that was subsequently submitted to that same body to determine whether or not it was correct in concluding that in light of that subsequent fact, it still believes it was not misled.
Second thing is when we look at this record, we, according to you, are looking for an intentional misrepresentation.
I believe that should be the requirement, yes.
Rather than a good faith effort to provide comprehensive information. Go ahead.
If I may, I did omit something the first time, and now you remind me. I believe that the best policy would be that it either be an intentional misrepresentation of fact, material fact, or a representation of fact that was exclusively within the knowledge of the speaker. That is, that the, in this case, municipality, the listener, was unable to verify.
Okay. All right. And then, as I understand it, the substantial evidence test is whether the evidence reasonably supports the decision. It's not like the jury verdict, is there any credible evidence that will do that. This is a higher standard of review.
It's deferential, but nevertheless meaningful, yes.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, just checking. Any other questions?
Yes. Counsel, in your fifth most recent answer to the Chief Justice, which I expect you to memorize for me, which I will remind you of the gist of, you said that it's the court's task, our task now, to go and review the decision, this isn't quite how you say it, of the decision of the group that was misled, and to determine whether they were either misled or I couldn't quite understand, that they were correct when they said they were not. Now, my problem with that is that's the Planning Commission, right?
Yes.
You're describing the Planning Commission.
Yes.
But the Planning Commission is not the ultimate arbiter here. The decision maker, as I understand, is the City Council.
Well, there are two answers to that question. The first is that, in fact, while the Plan Commission is not the final arbiter, the Plan Commission is the body which is charged not only by statute but by the Green Bay ordinances with consideration of conditional use permits.
But certiorari review, as I understand it, having conducted any number of certiorari reviews, is a review of the final administrative arbiter.
You are – the problem with this case, of course, is it's getting convoluted. I mean, it's a multi-step, and it's the city reversing itself as well. You are clearly reviewing the most recent decision of the City Council to revoke the CUP.
Right.
But the question is that you must then take the next step and say, is there a basis on which –
The next step, the next step, Mr. Apfel, is to determine how it is the city says it was misled. And then the third step is to do.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Could I ask you hypothetically on the front end, there is certainly some discretion in the City Council whether to grant conditional use permit.
There is, and you have raised a potentially thorny question, because while there is a certain amount of discretion, and in fact we did apply for a conditional use permit, one could argue that perhaps a conditional permit was unjustifiably required in this case. But that's not the issue on appeal. The answer to your question is, yes, they clearly had more latitude in the initial consideration.
Well, hypothetically, could a city council have turned down a conditional use permit because they thought this is going to require smokestacks?
This is going to require what?
Smokestacks.
Certainly, if the smokestacks would have exceeded the building code, yes, they could have turned it down. If you say, though, they could have turned it down because there were going to be emissions, I'm not quite so certain that it's any emissions, that is. I'm not quite so certain that that's within their discretion, because emissions are a matter that is regulated by the state. And the city cannot impose additional requirements where the state, has issued its own requirements, standards. I think we cite to a decision in our brief, De Rosso Landfill, 200 West Second, 642. But
so it's not a black and white question. If I'm sitting as a member of the city council,
yes,
and somehow I say, I don't want any more smokestacks in Green Bay. I'm not voting for any project that has smokestacks. Would you say you have to vote for some projects with smokestacks? And that's irrespective of the kind of information that's presented to the
council. If the city council turned down this application solely because there were going to be 35-foot smokestacks, which is what the eventual plans were, and that's within the building code, in this industrial wasteland where this thing is situated, I would view that as an arbitrary and capricious act. There is no aesthetic value in the area that we're talking about, as anyone familiar with Green Bay would attest.
Just for clarification, I understood these stacks to be about 3 feet above the roof line.
The ridge line of the roof, yes.
The ridge line of the roof.
Yeah, the roof is like this. There's the ridge line. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. That is the eventual configuration. The initial configuration, or the initial license granted, air permit granted by DNR, said they got to be 60 feet tall. And someone pointed out, you know, that's higher than the Green Bay Code permits. So OSGC went back to DNR, and they worked their engineering, and they said, no, you can combine these stacks into one stack. You make it a little bigger in diameter. It's 35 feet tall. That's within code. It's 3 feet above the ridge line, which, by the way, is lower than the flagpole in the diagram that the city refers to constantly. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
How much above the flat roof line of the pictures that are initially given for this project would the 35-foot stack be? Do you know?
Well, again, it's the ridge line. It's not a truly flat roof. It is a peaked roof. The peak of the roof.
Okay, I was just looking at the pictures that showed a flat roof.
You may be looking at a side elevation, but it is a peak. Whatever the top line is the peak of the roof. That is 32 feet. The stacks, as modified, are 35 feet, so 3 feet above.
From the ground, they're measuring.
From the ground.
From the top of the roof.
Yes. By comparison, the Leo Frigo Bridge nearby is about 205 feet. The Pulliam Power Plant stack is 377 feet. The top of the statue here is 265 feet.
A wealth of knowledge today. Thank you.
Just by comparison.
The batting average of the...
Don't ask me that. Don't ask me.
Thank you,
Thank
Mr.
you,
Hatfield. Mr. Morfinski.
Thank you. In rebuttal, what I'd like to do is first start with to make it clear that there were misrepresentations that were made to the City Council at the March 1 hearing. It was on video. It is on video. There was a response by OSGC to a question regarding whether the exhaust to be emitted from the facility would be actually clean, and the answer was yes. There was the PowerPoint presentation showing, you know, showing the markup, showing the building, with the comment saying no stacks.
I see you're all ready to go, but I'm going to interrupt.
Thank you.
No problem. Okay. Why shouldn't our focus, you're going back to it, the initial presentation. Why shouldn't our focus be on the articulated reasons that the city said it was misled, which so far you and your opposing counsel have been consistent in telling me are the ones that were made by Mr. Sladek at the last meeting. So those are the three things that we should be looking at. Now, it seems to me you want to take us down a path. I'm not going to say it has no end, but it's pretty far away. Shouldn't we be focusing? Aren't we required to focus on the articulated reasons for the revocation in order to determine whether there was substantial evidence of having been misled?
Yes, that is the test. It is a certiorari review, and that was the decision that was made.
Thank you.
And the reason that I went back to look at, to point out to these is because that's what he's referring to. When he makes those comments, he's referring back to what's in the record, to these kinds of statements that are made earlier.
Okay, but you have to, my point was, the reason why I jumped in is you didn't link those two things up. You didn't say, in order to support, and I would have liked that presentation, in order to support this allegation of having been misled, Mr. Sladek was referring to this representation, in order to support the chemical misleading. Now, either you can do it in a few minutes, or the rest of us are going to have to do it through the record.
What I will say is that our briefs articulate those on numerous, at numerous spots. Okay. And I think the, real point of this is the positions of the opponents and the proponents. I mean, the city is sitting here making a decision. You have to remember, there were opponents. There were people who brought this to the city's attention. It was an adversarial process in a way, because you had project opponents who were raised these concerns in the first instance. You have OSGC who responded to those concerns. They responded on April 19th, 10 days after the decision was made to have a hearing, with a letter articulating why there were no misrepresentations. They knew what the claims were. At every stage of the process, it was well understood. We had an adversarial process. It wasn't the city saying this and that. The city was listening to what was being presented. That's what the city council did at the end. They listened to what was being presented by both sides and looked back and said, you know what, we think that there were misrepresentations made to the city. That's what he says. That's what Alderman Sladek says. They were made to governmental bodies. And the reason why that's important is because it goes to the integrity of the process in the first instance.
So I was correct when I asked Mr. Apfel, do you agree that we need to look at the entire context of this matter and the entire record in order to determine whether there's substantial evidence of the city having been misled on these three topics?
Yes, you have to do that, and you do it with a presumption that the city was correct in making this decision. There is a presumption of correctness associated with what was done here. And so I think it's deferential to them. I think it is looking at it. Is there any evidence to support their decision? I think that you look at the entire record.
Substantial evidence, not any evidence.
Well, it's substantial evidence, meaning is it something that a reasonable person can rely on to support the decision? That's the point. The point is to support the decision, not to defeat the position. You don't look for reasons why a different decision could have been made. I could have been standing here today had the decision been the exact opposite, and we had the opponents who were making this argument, because the city's decision was based upon substantial evidence in the record. There was enough where one could arguably go either way. That's what we pointed out in our briefs. It was 7-5, the vote of the council. You know, reasonable minds did differ at that time as to what was going on, and so I think that's evidence as well. The evidence is the entire record, but it's with an eye towards supporting the decision, not to revisiting it in total.
Which is the same in any certiorari review.
I agree, but I'm just saying, but it is still looking back and looking at what to support the record as opposed to just a look at it everything and then try to put your own context to it and say, I can explain this. You still have to say, was this statement made? There is clear and convincing evidence that these statements were made. They're in the record. They're in print. And so that evidence exists, that they were made. People want to give them context. That's fine, but the context that matters is the city's context. It matters why were these statements made in the first instance? Why were they pitching the project this way? Why didn't they just come out and say what they really knew? My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Your time is up. And I would like to thank you, Attorney Wapinski, and you, Attorney Apfel, for your arguments today on a very interesting issue about the authority of the City Council and Plan Commission and the concept of misrepresentation. That concludes our hearing on 2013 AP 591, Oneida Seven Generations Corporation versus City of Green Bay. The court is in recess until tomorrow when we will have three oral arguments. The court will meet in closed conference at 3:30. We are in recess.